Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Moose Hunt Podcast, brought to you in part by OMM Outfitters and the Eagle Lake Sporting Camps of Eagle Lake, Maine. As always, I'm your host, Chris Richards, and we are coming to you from the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show, housed in the field house at the University of Maine. Sitting down, we got Matt Maloney, we got Ken Mayo, we got Cody McDonald with his kid in the back, bombing around, just walked up. So we're sitting here. The show just kicked off. It's Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m.
I tell you, a good crowd this early, Chris.
A good crowd. I think people are pent up for this. I think that spring has sprung, and people are looking for something to do to kind of get out on, get the cabin fever out, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you, there's this other show that we may go to. It's much smaller, but I love the name of it, so we got to do it next year. They do it in Brewer, and it's called the Cabin Fever Reliever. And so we got to do that. But, gentlemen, how are we all doing today?
Happy to be here, Chris. Happy to be here.
Yeah, same here. First time at Eastern Maine Sportsman Show, so excited to be here. Excited to meet some new folks and share all the cool stuff we're doing.
And, you know, if you hear the background noise, there's people everywhere. There's been dogs barking. You know, the whole shooting match. So, and I think one thing that's cool about this show is Penobscot County Conservation Association is kind of the chief organizer, and they've hosted this here at UMaine for a long time. I don't know if it's been here always, but this is, I believe that it's over 80 years that they've done this show anyway. And so this is kind of one of the first ones here in Maine to kind of, to just celebrate all things outdoors. And we got the Maine Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, Conservation, Biology, which I'm very familiar with. We got Baxter State Park. We've got a vendor behind us with fire rings, custom-made fire rings, and outfitters and different things. Tons of raffles. It's seminars all day, so it should be a good show. But we're looking forward to kind of conversing with some people on moose, our favorite topic, and maybe highlighting some awesome causes. We're admiring right now this epic slideshow that Kenny put together, and there's Cody hiking a bull out meat bag and quarter at once with shirt off.
I mean, it was intense.
That
was like his second or third pack that trip, huh?
Second
yeah,
pack.
Yeah, he says it modestly.
And he's got the
no
shirt
big
off.
Deal.
He's got the shirt off.
Tarps off, baby.
So it's good. It's good. So, well, gentlemen, we got some guests coming by, and much like we do with some of these shows, we'll have a few different people on throughout the day and just see where the day goes. But I anticipate some pretty epic stories. Last night here was really wild because just on the other side of the wall, University of Maine women's basketball won the America East Championship to win an automatic ticket to the big NCAA tournament, to the big dance.
Right.
And so you could hear it shaking.
Yeah,
like
it was awesome.
It was awesome. You could hear it in here. And so it's super fun to kind of, this is a merging of worlds for me, I guess. So, you know, I'm right turboed out. I'm not wearing any OMM apparel. I'm wearing a UMaine hockey jersey because we're all going to the game tonight.
Yeah,
and it's going
right.
to be, it's going to be awesome to be there and have you guys there. And so anyway, but anything specific you hope to see at the show today, guys?
I mean, I just love the amount of youth here already that I'm seeing coming through. This is pretty awesome. And it's pretty cool to like be part of this now from coming here for so long as a kid. This was it, you know. This was one of the first ones to come to, so pretty psyched.
Yeah, I know, for sure. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, same thing, you know, seeing all the kiddos. It's kind of fun too as a group.
Yeah,
you know, coming together and hanging out with each other, you know.
That's right.
We chat quite a bit on text messages and Facebook, but you know, to spend a day together is kind of fun too, so a little bit of everything.
And we had an epic breakfast at Dysart's truck stop.
So, there you go.
You know, so thank you for the corned beef hash hit perfect, just as it always does. So
certainly.
It's good stuff. Well, all right, folks, we look forward to sharing some moose stories and some interesting characters as we go through the day. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back soon with y'all from the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show. Stay tuned, folks, while we take a brief break for a word from our sponsors.
If you're looking for a world-class destination to go after big game or small game, look no further than OMM Outfitters. I'm Nathan Terrio with OMM Outfitters, and we encourage you to take a look at what we have to offer, please visit our website at www.ommoutfitters.com and see what our professional staff has to offer and how we can create memories of a lifetime.
And now, let's get back to the podcast. Hello, folks, and we are back, coming to you live from the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show, hosted by the Penobscot County Conservation Association. And we got our first formal guest of the show coming on here. We got our good friend, well, my good friend, Ed Curtis, resides in the area here near you, Maine. Local businessman, connoisseur, legend of the Maine woods. And we're going to get to know Ed a little bit. Here are some moose hunting stories from the past.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
I'll tell you. I think men of my father's generation, y'all look so much alike. Number one, the mustache. You guys can rock it. We can't. I don't get it.
I can't rock the beard like you do.
Well, okay. Well, thanks. So I have one thing going for me. But like, I'll tell you a story about this. I remember when my father, Wild Bill, shaved his mustache when I was in like sixth grade. And I wouldn't ride in a vehicle with him.
Scared you?
Scared me. Yeah. My mother told me. She's like, Chris, you wouldn't even talk to your father. You wouldn't go in a vehicle with him. So anyway, so thank you for coming.
I appreciate it, Chris.
On this the podcast. So I know Ed. I first met Ed because listeners know I work here at UMaine. And Ed has Creative Print Services and bailed me out in a bind of needing some ridiculous amount of printed material that takes 2 months to print, and I needed it in 10 days, and it would cost $100,000, and I only had a budget of $20,000, and he made it all happen. So you're...
Remember the funny part about that was when you had the decimal point in the wrong spot?
Yeah. Oh, my
and
God.
You thought it was going to cost $100,000?
All right, so we got to tell a story.
I should have let you go with that.
Oh, my God. So, Eric, you'll love this. We're printing something. We're printing envelopes. Envelopes. That's it. And I needed a lot of them. And the unit M, like the big letter M, means 1,000. So the person who in marketing at the time sent me, said, yeah, I said, get those from Ed Mint. She goes, okay, here's the price. We ordered them. You're going to pay. So they're ordered. She did the calculation.
All in.
She said that M, she thought that meant 100. So all of a sudden, my $10,000 printing expense, I'm like, wait a second. We just spent $100,000 on envelopes. My God, I'm getting ready to call like my boss. I'm getting ready to like prepare my resume.
Find a new job.
For your resignation.
My new job search, yeah. Right? I'm like, what are we doing?
That was funny.
And so, oh, my God. I remember I called Ed. I'm like, tell me this didn't happen. Please.
I should have kept it going for you.
I took 6 years off my life. So Ed, funny. Why don't you tell us kind of your history, where you grew up, you got into hunting. Tell us about your company, also the family famous dog.
Yes, the family dog. My wife's over there right now. She owns the family dog with my stepson. And I think everybody at the Sportsman Show should go over there this afternoon and get some food.
Yeah, I think we're going to.
Yeah, well, that'll be on the house. I grew up in this area. I've been here forever. I've got a business in Bangor, Creative Print Services, and my wife owns the family dog. She was a nurse practitioner for years, and somehow she decided to buy a restaurant. I thought she was losing her mind, but they're having a lot of fun with it. I think. And I've been hunting my entire life and fishing, fly fishing the whole nine yards. And I've had a couple of interesting moose hunts.
Yeah. That's really what we want to hear from Ed, because it's so cool when I go to meet in his office and I see, you know, there's pictures, right?
Yep.
There's pictures and this and that. So I want to hear the story of your first permit,
yep,
where you went, the zone, what the hunting was like.
All the details,
the nitty-gritty.
I had to keep a couple of them secret because I'm hoping to get another permit.
Well, I might have to edit a few of them out, but, yeah, you know, don't worry. We have control for that after the fact.
I'm planning on going to OMM next year. I'm just going right straight to the source.
Yeah. Well, we can make that happen.
Yeah, my first, we had five buddies that we all grew up hunting together, and We started putting in right at the beginning, right in 1980. And nobody got a permit because that was back in the days, you know, you get one shot.
Right.
And finally, after 105 tries, because it was the 20th year, in 2000, I finally got a permit. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, my phone started ringing. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? And the guys are, first guy says, you got a permit.
They were like outfitters calling you or?
No, no, buddies.
Oh, okay.
Because evidently they were up listening a lot earlier than I was.
The first guy to get the newspaper.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly
right. Page.
Eddie got one.
It came to the paper and my name was in there. And it was like, and I, so I jumped up, ran down, ran up the driveway and got my newspaper. Sure enough, they weren't kidding. I thought they were kidding me after, 105 tries.
But, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got a permit and went out to my buddy's camp and hunted out there. The first, it was kind of interesting. The very first day, we had 17 guys at our hunting camp, okay? People sleeping on the floor, bunk beds were all full, the whole nine yards. And it tapered down. Every day, you could see a few people saying, I got to go back to work. And they left. Finally, the last day, there were two of us.
What zone were you in?
Two of us. I'm not sure which zone that was. The down east zone? What number is that?
Probably 18 or 19.
Yeah, something like that.
Yep.
So... yeah, I finally got him on the next to the last day, Friday morning. Yeah, it was Next to the last day.
You had anything during the week, or what was...
We chased a few around.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one that I actually thought was just a monster bull, and we chased him and caught up with him, and it was just a little spike one. And this was the first day.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to wait. I'm going to hold out. And boy, by the time I got to that next to the last day, I started to get a little nervous.
Yeah.
So this one was nice enough to step out and commit suicide.
Right. Now, I think you told me, did your buddies get lost trying to go get your...
Yes.
You had a recovery.
Yeah, this is that first one.
Yes.
Yeah, so we got the moose, and it was ice on the puddles when we got it. It was early in the morning, and it was October. Yeah, October. And threw ice on the puddles. Those guys took off to go back to get the trailer back to camp. We were quite a ways away from camp. Well, they took a wrong turn somehow, idiots. They go up in the air and they still took a wrong turn. And so I'm sitting there waiting, sitting on my moose, and keeping all the blowflies away, the whole nine yards, right? And people are coming by going, geez, are you all right? And one guy, I said, no, I'm not. And I said, my moose is getting hot. The temperature got up to like 70. And these guys are still not showing up, Chris, right? And so one guy felt bad for him, and he went out and he got a bunch of ice, a bunch of blocks of ice, and came back. It took him about an hour. And he came back out into the woods. And
so hang on. How many hours transcribe on this?
Let's see. Right at daybreak was when we shot it, right at first. As a matter of fact, I brought my gun up, and I said, it's bulls. I had a bull only. Brought my gun up, saw it was a bull, and I said to my buddy, I said, is it legal shooting time? And he goes, not yet. And then he goes, but now it is. It happened that quick. I'm serious. It was just like literally within seconds. And touched it off. He ran around the corner and he was just laying in the road kicking, so it was pretty easy, except for the weight from those guys trying to go get the trailer.
And, so how long did that take until?
They didn't get back until 1. Yeah. And so I'm not even sure that ice in the cavity, I talked to you about it one time. I'm not sure that really did any good.
Well, we talk about that a lot. And, it doesn't do what people think it does. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
I think that's the key
it's
thing.
It's not going to get up to the shoulders or.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, that was our only desperation move at that point.
I mean, we joke about this. That used to be the thing.
Oh, yeah.
People stuff in the cavity.
That was the answer. It used to be.
Freeze your milk jugs for 2 months before you're...
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it, right?
Oh, yeah. And keep them in the cooler.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's kind of... It's changed, but... So it took them...
Whatever.
7 hours?
Yeah, something like that. They got lost. They literally got lost. And I'm like, I don't understand how you guys can do that. You grew up in this area, but... Anyway, and they weren't even drinking, Chris. I don't think. I don't. Maybe they weren't.
Maybe that's was that the problem.
Maybe that was the problem.
Well, that's the thing. I was joking because I'll tell this story. When you told me that the first time, I had this revelation. So, I'll tell this story. You'll love this, Eric. Years ago, my old man. This is before I was born. He took my grandfather, his father-in-law, so my mother's old man, up to Holton, because my dad's from Holton, and they used to deer hunt up there every year,
mm-hmm.
and shot a lot of big bucks, especially in the 80s and 90s. And so he's taking Gramps up there, and he ended up shooting like a 212 pounder my dad did on the strip. But anyway, they're out hunting one day, and my father is in the woods, and he's like, he'd done some scouting. He says, I was barely out of sight of the road. I found this ridge, and it was just pounded with scrapes, the whole thing. Then he said, well, why not? I'll sit up there for the week. And he goes, I get up there, and it's pouring rain and pouring rain and pouring rain. He goes, and I'm sitting and I'm sitting. And then it's like that cold rain where there's like 10 snowflakes in it. Like, it's as cold a rain as you can have without
miserable snow.
And so my dad says, well, geez, I better go down to the truck. You know, I bet, you know, Dave, my grandfather's there hanging out. And so anyway, he gets down there. He gets to the truck. Gramps isn't there. So he's waiting and he's waiting and he's waiting. At this point, they had like a meet back at the truck at 11 lunchtime anyway. So he goes, well, maybe he's just sitting till lunch. Like,
yeah.
You know, crazy old man, whatever. So he sits and he's waiting and he's waiting, and Gramp ain't coming up. So he goes on a little venture down in the woods. Nothing. Gets back. Starting to get a little worried. Nothing. And it's getting rainier and rainier and rainier. And now we're like late afternoon.
Panic's starting to set in.
I mean, we're hours, like late afternoon. And so he's thinking, I got to go get help. Like, but he's way down in the spot. He goes, it's going to take me 40 minutes to get to pavement. Like, he's, God forbid he comes out and I'm gone. And,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and this is before the technology we have now, like with InReach. Cell phone coverage is so much better than it used to be. Satellite, like, we can get a message out.
X Hunt.
Yeah, whatever, you know, like, we can get a message out. So, anyway, he's at that moment of, like, I got to make a decision. You know, indecision can be the worst thing. He goes, all right, I got to go get help. All of a sudden, he says, I see some lights coming down the road. And up drives this truck, and there were these two brothers that my dad knew that had lived in a farm up the road.
Yeah.
They wheel up. My grandfather, he says, Chris, he fell out of that truck. And he's like, and my dad, he was like, I was so happy to see him, but I was so mad. And he goes, come to find out, he'd come out on the road like a mile down in that pounding rain mid-morning when my dad come out.
Yeah.
Well, they were out there heater hunting, and they drove up and said, geez, bud, you know, you need help. He goes, yeah. I'm up here hunting my son-in-law, Bill. Geez, we know, Bill. We're heading up to camp. Yeah, sure. He'd been up to camp had some drinks with those guys and met some friends and riding around bird hunting.
Meanwhile, everybody else is panicking.
Meanwhile, my old man is there having a heart attack. He goes, I was so relieved that he wasn't dead, and then I almost shot him. So I'm sure you probably felt the same way on your moose hunt with them.
Yeah, I think everybody that's hunted has had one of those situations where someone gets lost.
Yeah.
Big panic. Yeah, I had a good friend who'd never hunted. He'd always wanted to hunt. We played a lot of racquetball together back in the days. And he came out, and I said, okay, yeah, this is easy. Just stay on the road. Well, he got on the road, but then he jumped a deer, got down into the swamp, got twisted around, ended up out on some other road. And it got dark, and we're all, you know, right in a panic. We're down there in the swamp looking around, screaming, shooting a gun. And he comes driving in, same situation.
Oh, yeah.
He got picked up out on the other road, stopped in the store, got some beer. Meanwhile, we're all having, like you said, heart attacks.
You're panicking, looking
for
him.
It's awful, yeah. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny to tell about afterwards.
Yeah,
it's
time, I mean, so you chuckle about it now. But
yeah.
And the thing is, I know my father, and he's such a... My father is very safe, like, with growing up with him. Like, we did everything safe and right. And thank God, because I probably could have learned some bad lessons from some others clearly in my life.
But, might not be here.
But he, oh, man, it was the best.
Yeah.
It was the best.
Oh, that's cool.
So you got your moose.
Got my moose, got him back,
No spoilage, you didn't have any issues.
No, it really actually worked out okay.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to, but it worked out okay, yeah. And then the next hunt, let's see. The next hunt, my buddy got the permit. So my good friend, I'm not supposed to say his name on the radio. We said, don't you dare say my name on the radio.
Okay, sounds good. We'll protect the innocent.
Yeah, so there's a certain thing that can happen. You can shoot a moose, you can not shoot a moose, and then there's one thing that's worse than that.
There's wounded a moose.
Wounded a moose.
Yeah.
And losing him. And that's what happened to my... So 2 years later, he got his permit. And we hunted the entire time. And the very last day, two bulls jumped out. They were up on a ridge, stepped out. And we were, you know, at this point, we were saying, all right, this is going to be a lost cause. We're not going to get a moose. You know, really nervous about it because everyone was getting moose in those days.
Right.
And so he didn't want to be that one guy that didn't get a moose. And finally, these two bulls jumped out. And he had switched from his 30-06 to his 308. And I'm not sure whether that was a factor or not. It's all about placement. I'm not sure why. He liked the scope better on his 308, I think, is what it was.
Yep.
And I'm not sure why. It was an old Redfield, I think.
Yep.
And he waited, and he took a shot. And he said, I got him. He said, it went down. So we all waited for a little while. Went up, and there was no moose. He wasn't there. Yeah. So we tracked. So this was the last morning. And we tracked that, little spots of blood. I mean, we were like, if we had a magnifying glass, we'd have been using that, Chris. Tracked him. Finally, just no more blood. And we looked all around and looked everywhere. And the last day, went back in the next day, which was a Sunday, I think. It was after the last day. Never got it. So that's the one thing that's worse than not getting a moose, is wounding a moose, losing him.
Well, Eric has the, you told the story of the, of the golden goose, right? The golden goose was the one on the pond.
Oh yeah, yeah. Same scenario.
You'll love this one.
Years ago, my cousin had a permit and we shot at a bull. I say we. I wasn't the sub permit. He shot at a bull that was in the water, and we still really don't know to this day what happened, where the moose is, if it sunk, if it came out of the pond. It was quite a thing. Heartbreaker though, you know, because you could see the bullets hitting the moose. There was no doubt about that. That wasn't
in
question. Yeah, he was in the water feeding. It was like middle of the day, and pretty sure we pond because there was a lot of wet leaves in one particular area, but we really weren't sure. And again, like I said, I don't really know. We don't really know what happened.
So the thought is, it sank.
Yeah.
Imagine
that's probably the outcome, really, because we waded through that pond, and it's a fairly large pond, and there were places that were over our head that we couldn't look, and yeah, that was up near like Grafton State Park, up in that area,
right?
And that was in Zone 12.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one.
That was a heartbreaker.
Yeah, anybody that hunts is going to go through that.
That was
sooner
a heartbreaker.
Later. I've had it happen with deer.
Yep.
Yeah. But we did have another one. So Pete never did tag out that year.
Yep.
And then the next hunt we had, I've only been on four moose hunts.
Yep.
Believe it or not.
Only. I tell you, there's a lot of people we had talked to that would pray to go on one year.
Yeah.
So Ed, be careful where you're saying that.
Sorry, can I take that back? we had another one. I got a permit last year. You knew that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I gave it to Pete.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, I said, this, you know, let's reverse roles. I'll be the sub permittee. You take the permit. And we hunted out of his camp, and a guy was going to trade with us, which is down in that far southeast zone.
Yeah.
So we hunted out of his camp, but we were across the road, which I guess is like the least populated zone there is. But some guy from down there lived in that area, and evidently had a moose tethered out there or something. But because he was determined that I was going to swap with him for zone, the top zone. I think it's 12. So we ended up hunting down in that south.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But a guy called me and he said, "Hey," he said, a friend said that you'd switch with me because he said I've got the best zone there is," and he said I live down there. So he said, "Want to swap?" And I said, "Shoot, I guess so." So I called Pete, and Pete goes, "Nah," he said, "I'd rather hunt out of camp." Big mistake. Never saw our moose.
What it was actually, they had a zone 18 tag. And a guy called, wanted to switch. He had his own, too.
Yeah. That's right. Wow. It was over, too. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have been a bad swap.
So when Eddie called and told me that, I said, "So you're doing that, right?" And he's like, "Well, I don't." I'm like,
"Yeah. You gave me help.
I was like, "Are you kidding me?" You know, and yeah. I said, it's not that 18's a bad zone. It's just...
And it's not as populated as Zone 2.
Zone 2 is an exception.
That's right, it was Zone 2. Well, as it turned out, right by camp, the very last day, we had the fisheries biologist was hunting with us. We had a bunch of experienced hunters. And the very last day, we were heading back over to get across the Route 9, which was, you know, from camp. And a big bull, one of the biggest bulls I've ever seen, was right near camp, and that was the only one we saw. And he was right near camp, and he stepped out, and he would have committed suicide. He was right in the middle of the road, stood there and stared at us, and we're sitting there in the truck going, "Are you kidding me?" Because we couldn't shoot. It was the wrong zone. No. Yeah. Oh, my word. And you know, that was on top of not seeing a moose all week. And this was the last day.
That's tough.
And it was almost, I wish we hadn't seen him.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. I don't disagree.
Yeah.
So I remember. I remember talking to you after, and I was like, dang, you know, you're like, yeah, well, we finally saw one. I'm like, yeah, you're like, yeah, on the way to our unit.
Wrong zone. That's right.
That's tough.
The other successful hunt, so I've been on four. We've had two bulls killed, and my brother-in-law, who's shot moose and shot a lot of animals, his son got a permit, and we went through the whole deal, and we ended up, at the last second, we were up north, and we were in one of the good zones at that point. I can't remember which zone it was. But we were hunting with this guide who had a moose decoy. It was just a cutout, a cardboard cutout, and he had these little straps behind it. And so Reggie and I were in the truck behind this, the guide and his son, and all of a sudden it looked like Keystone Cops. The doors flew open, these guys are jumping out, and he grabs the decoy, and he jumps in front of him, and Zach is right beside him, and they're sneaking down the road, and I'm looking at this going, you have got to be kidding me. Is this really happening? So they went down, and the bull jumped, was in the road, stepped out of the road, went up into the woods, but evidently was curious. So he turned around and came back down and committed suicide.
Imagine that.
He's reaping.
Yeah, he actually turned around and came back to see it, to look at the decoy, and we watched the whole thing happen from the truck behind it. It was all pretty cool. That was a big bull. Yeah. That was a big bull.
I'll tell you, decoys are a powerful, powerful thing. You know, everyone has their little tips and tricks and things they try and whatever. I'm a big fan of a black top, personally. That's why I wear that. Like a black shirt.
Oh, really?
I don't usually wear a camo top. I like to wear a black long sleeve top, unless I, you know, if it's cold and I'm layering up or whatever. But I'll wear for that reason.
It looks more.
If in the heat of the moment, if you gotta jump out in the open or try something, might your black silhouette look like a moose? I don't know.
Yeah.
I used to drive a black truck because I thought a theory that if you came around a corner and you caught one by surprise standing in the logging road and you could scream a cow call out the window real quick and they'd see a black thing, they'd stop and actually wait, but I don't know.
That isn't crazy. That could happen.
I don't know. I've had red trucks that those seem to be the color for road smacking them. I don't know. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Eddie.
Chris.
Thank you so much, buddy, for coming on.
Hey, you bet. It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
You guys, I listen to all your podcasts. You guys do a really good job.
Oh, we appreciate it. It's a fun project. And, you know, we can't hunt year-round for moose, but we can talk year-round about moose. So that's why we do. So. It's been good. We've given a lot of information out, kind of promoting the platform. And we've heard some awesome stories from people coming by.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to snag one of them eventually. There was a woman came by, told an insane story about a hunt last year, and then she immediately went on a hound bear hunt. And so if I see her again, I'm going to see if she's...
Drag her in.
Yeah, see if she's...
I like the one with the kids.
Yeah, they're going to be by here. We might get them on. We'll see. So anyway, Ed, my friend.
Great.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Eric, good to see you guys.
All right, folks. We'll be coming back to you again soon with more conversations about the Mighty Moose here at the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show. Stay tuned, folks, while we take a brief break for a word from our sponsors.
Eagle Lake Sporting Camps have been around since the 1890s. The camps sit on a 23,000-acre state reserve, surrounded by forest, loaded with wildlife, cabins at rustic, bathroom, shower, full bar, great food. If it has to do with outdoors, hiking, biking, camping, hunting, fishing, we can do it. All I can say is, if you're looking to get away, Eagle Lake Sporting Camps has what you're looking for.
To learn more about the Eagle Lake Sporting Camps, please visit eaglelakesportingcamps.com. And now, let's get back to the podcast. Hello, folks, and we are back at the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show, hosted at the University of Maine. We're sitting down with Rachel McManus.
Hi.
who is here promoting the Schoodick Lake Charity Bass Tournament. And maybe you'll tell a hunting story or two. Just saw a deer hunting video of hers. That might be a bit of a heartbreaker. We're here to kind of give Rachel the floor. Want you to just kind of share what the Derby is about, what you raise your money for, all those types of things, and maybe help get some people interested.
Yeah. So this coming summer will be our sixth tournament. We're very excited about it. So this year, all the money that we raise will be going to the Maine Veterans Project, and it will also be going to the Penquis Valley Middle School Outing Club, which I grew up doing. I went through that when I was in middle school. So trying to give back to the local community. They focus on getting kids in the outdoors. We always went camping and hiking and all of that kind of stuff. So our tournament is on July 14th this year, our bass tournament. We also do a cornhole tournament. The cornhole tournament is the day before, so it'll be July 13th. And our cornhole tournament prize, first place, will be $500. The bass tournament, we are one of the largest paying out bass tournaments in the state. We guarantee $2,000 to first place, $1,000 to second place. And I think one of the things that really sets us apart is we are the only tournament in the state that you can actually participate as a family as long as the kids are under 16 years old. So you and your wife and your kids can come out and have fun for the day. It's a $100 entry fee. And we also do prize drawings for just coming and entering the tournament. So last year, you know, there was a boat that came in almost dead last, and he walked away with a fishing trip to New York.
Wow, nice, nice. Awesome. So, and you said 6 years, have you been involved in this the whole time?
Yeah, or? Yeah. So I started doing this when I was in high school. I was 15 years old. And it started because I was in Key Club, and we were trying to raise $12,000 to build a freshwater well in Africa for a community that needed clean water. So we thought, you know, why not use our fresh clean water lake to try to raise awareness for the water crisis and everything. So that was the first tournament, and it just grew from there. We've picked a different charity every year to participate, and it's been a lot of fun. I love doing it so much. It's my baby.
That's awesome. So did you you started this?
Yes.
This is like your project?
Yeah.
Wow. So that's awesome. And to keep it going like this. And so obviously you have, it seems like, a number of supporters here kind of helping you do this booth. How big has this gotten from kind of where you imagined it as a high school student? Kind of what's that been like, seeing this kind of all seem to take on a life of its own, so to speak?
It's been amazing, to be honest. I really never thought that it would become this. I feel like has kind of made me who I am. You know, it's taught me a lot about life. It's taught me a lot about business. And I think that, you know, being 15, starting this, I called every single bass club in the state of Maine trying to find a bass club that would sponsor us. And every single one said no, except for one of them. He said, call Bangor Bass first. If they aren't interested, call me back. And so I ended up calling him back, and we had a meeting down in Augusta because that's kind of where they're from. And after that meeting was over, so I went to the meeting and I handed each of them a packet of my questions and what I already knew and what I was hoping to do with the tournament. And at the end of that meeting, his name is Steve Wilson, he looked at me and he said, I thought this meeting was going to be a complete waste of time. You proved me wrong.
Nice,
and so
nice.
That it's kind of just grown from there. And now we're involved with PCCA, so they're kind of the head of the tournament.
Right.
And I've carried it all the way through college, and I'm graduating and moving to Madawaska in a couple months. And I'm
moving up north.
Oh yeah, moving up north. And I'm gonna continue to do it through that. So
nice.
Hopefully it'll keep growing. The first year we had 25 boats, which is a lot for a first year. You know, we were expecting like 8 or 10.
Yeah.
And to get 25 boats the first year was amazing. And then last year we had 33 boats, I believe.
Nice.
So
nice. That's awesome. Now, people want to learn more, learn about it, register. How do they go about that?
Yeah. So first thing you can do is, number one, we go to all the sportsman shows in the state of Maine. So we're here all weekend long. Next weekend, we will be up in Presque Isle at that sportsman show. And then in April, we'll be at the state of Maine show. And if you can't catch us at one of those, we do have a Facebook and Instagram. It's just Scutic Lake Charity Bass Tournament. And you can follow us there, message us. One of our team members will answer you, answer all your questions. And if we can't answer your questions, we will find somebody who can. And as far as registering, you can register online at mainbassnation.com. That's where our application is. Or you can come and register that day. I highly encourage people to read the rules beforehand because there are certain rules because it's a tournament, not a derby. So there's a difference between those two. But you can come and register that morning. Just make sure that you kind of know ahead of time what you need with you and that type of thing.
I just learned something. I didn't know that. Not know that, that there was a difference between those things. Awesome. So I'd like you to, we're on the topic of fishing. I'd like you to tell us the story of the winter last second fishing fiasco that you got. This is a crazy story and one that I think our listeners out there will love to hear.
Yeah. So I do the Scutic Lake Ice Fishing Derby every year. I think I've gone since before I could walk because my parents grew up on the lake. Their parents grew up on the lake. So I was out fishing with Dad. You know, we hadn't really caught much all weekend long. We'd caught one fish and my dog ate it, so I couldn't even register it.
Is it like a school? You say my dog ate my homework. If you show up to register a fish, you say, well, the dog ate it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Basically. So, but you know, we kept fishing hard. I was determined. I just wanted a fish to register, because you get in prize drawings just for registering. So, Sunday we were fishing the end and, we're fishing out in the shack and I had just checked, you know, I just looked out the window and there was no flags and we were talking about how, if it's a big fish, you know, you walk up to the trap and that reel is just going to be spinning. Right. And that hadn't happened all day. We'd caught a couple fish, but they were all too small to keep. And so we were just talking about that and I was like, oh, flag. We walked out and we were like, you know, we're not even going to get this up in time if it's big enough to register. It was like 5:12 and they closed at 5:30.
Yeah.
And we walked up to it and that reel was just a spinning. It was the line was almost gone and I had a lot of line on that trap. And so, you know, I pulled the trap out of the water and I felt the line. And I'm like, oh, like there's definitely something there. And I set the hook and started pulling and it started pulling hard. And I was like, oh, like this is going to be a good fish. And so it fought hard.
Yep.
Fought hard and got it to the hole. And Dad was like, oh, like that is a good fish.
Right.
Because we just saw it swim by real quick. And so finally got it. So I got the head up out of the hole and we were like, oh my gosh, like that's a really big fish. And was just about to pull it out and it spit the hook, but it was still in the water. Like we hadn't grabbed it yet. So I shoved my whole arm down the hole and I was holding the fish to the side of the ice and my jacket is starting to freeze. And I'm like, Dad, like grab the fish. Like it spit the hook. And so he grabbed the fish and like threw it out of the water. And we looked at the time and it was like, I don't know, like 5:20.
Oh my God.
And we're not really close to the landing. And he's like, you got to take the sled. Like the four wheeler's not going to make it in time. And so I went and I grabbed the sled and I went zooming down that lake on the sled.
With the fish just flopping on the side.
And it's on the running board flopping. And I'm like, please don't fall off. And I got to the landing at 5:28. There was two minutes before they closed. And I walked up and everybody that was standing there waiting for the results, you know, they were like, that's taking it. Like that's a big fish.
So if someone's there thinking they won.
Oh yeah.
And you just come wheeling up on a sled like holding a fish.
Yeah. And it's so funny. So I'm a small person, right? I'm not very big. This fish was like as long as my torso. Like it was a massive fish.
Yeah.
And I didn't really realize how big it was. Like I knew it was a big fish, but they weighed it and it was 8 pounds, 2 ounces.
Nice.
And I was like, wait, what? Like, I just took first place. What? But it was really, really cool. Yeah. And it's definitely one of those experiences that I will remember forever.
That's awesome. Well, certainly appreciate you bringing a bit of, you know, the fishing flavor, I guess, if you will, to the Moose on Podcast. And I'm sure that's an awesome memory for for you and your father. And, you know, I know you're big into the outdoors. It's awesome to see you kind of doing this thing. And this, you know, Scudic Bass Tournament is awesome, a great cause. So I'd encourage anyone out there, you know, looking for a summer activity, check them out, visit the website, learn all the information, register, go out and support them, support this organization that's really kind of going out of their way to help some many, many deserving people. So anything else you'd like to share for those out there, for the listening public?
I think that's it. I appreciate the time on the podcast, and I look forward to getting out, fishing the tournaments, and getting out and hunting, and hopefully getting on a moose hunt someday.
Yes, well, keep applying, and if you do, be sure to touch base with us, and we'll be sure to share info or support you any way we can. So,
for sure, thank you, Rachel. Thank you.
Take care. It's going. Welcome back to the Moose Hunt Podcast, recording live from the Eastern Maine Sportsman's Show, put on by the Penobscot County Conservation Association and hosted at the beautiful University of Maine Fieldhouse here in Orono, Maine. Coming back after a nice little conversation, four of us are sitting down, Mr. Maloney, Mr. Mayo, Mr. Poland, and myself, and we're actually been talking to a lot of people. We just saw someone came up and showed a picture of a 228. Was that how we?
Yeah, I think it was 228 and change bull
inch here in Maine moose,
giant.
Speechless. From an area we know.
All too well.
So let's go back there. But I just threw this to the guys here, and we're going to have a little conversation about 1, 2, 3, whatever you guys can think of. What comes to your mind is the biggest mistakes you maybe think you've seen people make on their moose hunt. It could be a specific story. It could be a thematic thing. You know, you guys certainly have been in the woods with a number of people now, and I think are, you know, have as much authority to talk on that as anyone. I think we'll turn to Mr. Mayo first, because he's, for some reason, the public loves Kenny. And frankly, I think we need to get him off this as soon as possible, because everyone walking by, men, women, children, it doesn't matter. They just seem to want to talk to Kenny and only Kenny, because Matt, Eric, and I have just been hanging out the whole time.
I think you guys have been doing that on purpose.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But we have to give a shout out to the world famous family dog. That was a great lunch that we just
great
had.
Lunch.
So
yeah,
thank you, Ed, for the tip. And so anyway, Kenny.
Yeah.
Why don't you kind of share... As I said, it can be a specific story or something that went sideways, or when you think about what are the biggest mistakes you think people make on their hunt that take away from either the success, or even it doesn't have to be necessarily the success of harvest, but the success of the overall experience. Takes something is lost because of whatever issue happens.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, really looking down on it, back on some of my own hunts, personal hunts, some of the guiding, some stories, just talking to the general public and people. I think getting, if it doesn't work out Monday, don't get down in the dumps. I think a lot of people get down in the dumps Monday, Tuesday, not a lot's happening. They don't hear anything, don't see anything. And it's really easy to dig yourself that hole and just sit in there the rest of the week. It's really important that you got to remember, it's a moose hunt. The moose is just a bonus. It really is. What are you there for? What are your goals? Spend time in the outdoors with your family, friends, and fellowship. That's important. Having your goals listed out, what you want to achieve is really important. It might sound crazy, but like setting that schedule out, you know, doing a rough draft of what you want of your hunt, it's a really good idea, because you get up there, you get scrambling, it's exciting, you know, you really forget sometimes what you're actually doing there. You can get
rambled and scrambled, boys. That's a new saying right there. That's lock it in. Every second counts, and rambled and scrambled.
No, but just looking at it, I mean, that to me is probably one of the biggest things there, Chris, and, you know. Yeah, go for there. There's plenty of other things I could touch base on, but I think the round table here will touch on them.
Yeah. Mr. Maloney.
Yeah, I think a little bit to build off Kenny, you know, the age old adage of moose hunting, it's easy, right? You drive the truck down the road, pick the bull you want. So I think sometimes people set their expectations based on it's going to be easy. It's not. I just talked to a gentleman the other day, a few minutes ago, and he's talking about how smart moose are. They're intelligent creatures. They can sneak through the woods. I mean, I heard you talking about how they can stand still forever. I mean, I think that expectation of, I'm going to go up there, I got a tag, I'm going to go kill a bull on day one, bad mindset to start off with. And I think the other thing, too, that comes with that is you get nervous when that thing walks out. I've had people that confident in their ability to shoot, 200 yards offhand, you know, I shoot my rifle all the time. When that bull steps out, it's the first moose hunt. You got to be prepared. So, you know, we'll go back to Janty's podcast talking about, you know, trying to get your heart rate up and get excited, shoot your rifle, you know, try to simulate that the best you can is important. So I think going into that with the mindset of it's not going to be as easy as I think it's going to be, and I have to prepare because it is a once-in-a-lifetime hunt. You know, I think that's the situation a lot of people get themselves in, which leads to, like Kenny said, day one, you're not done. All of a sudden, you're kind of checked out mentally.
You're wound up, and
right,
it can spiral.
Yeah.
Yeah, the emotional toll.
Absolutely.
Of the moose hunt.
It's tough.
Absolutely.
Mr. Poland. I'm waiting for, I'm sure you've got a bullet list here ready to go.
I'm going to go broad spectrum. No, I think getting hyper-focused on the killing part is a big mistake, right? I think that a lot of people that get tags are either not from Maine, or they're from southern Maine, or they're from a part of Maine where they don't get to see the stuff that the Northwoods has to offer you, and they forget to stop and look around and enjoy what's going on. Like, so a lot of people don't have a colorful fall. They don't. You know, if you go south of New England, falls are boring and brown and they're unexciting, and ours are not. They're very, you know, there's a lot to see, a lot to look at, and a lot of topography that we have to offer. And I think that if you miss that whole experience, you've really missed out on a lot, you know. You know, you should make the most of every second that you can.
Make every second count.
Yeah.
He did it right up. No, for sure. No, great points. And, you know, I think when I was reflecting on this too, so much of this is sparks from conversations we've been having. And I think my thing that I will say that is seeming to come, I don't know that I've observed this necessarily, but I've certainly heard it. We heard it last night. Is sometimes I think a big mistake one can make is not asking the right questions if you do opt to go for a guided hunt.
Great point. Not every guided hunt's going to match your goals or right. your abilities.
And let's be frank, every outfitter out there is going to market their most successful experiences. You know, so you can go on a website and find plenty of moose outfits with 50-inch bulls and you know, may have wonderful reputations and not necessarily undeservedly so. But when you make your reservation call, you really should ask the right questions, because we've heard some stories that I would say are 100% because of the expectations not being met.
Right.
And hunts where they killed moose.
Right.
And a hunter not having a ton positive to say about their experience.
Right.
I mean, you know, which, what a shame.
Yeah.
You know, because that really is, you're going moose hunting with the goal of getting a moose. Right. You know, so yeah. If you ultimately go and have the ultimate success, I guess, of actually getting one, and you look back on your experience, I think that's the biggest heartbreaker that one could have. I mean, I guess wounding one or whatever too, but
right.
But to actually harvest a bull and not look back on that memory because it wasn't the experience you wanted is something that it just kind of broke my heart for a couple of these people we've talked to.
The conversation, I killed a moose, but. Right.
But, literally.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I've heard that. And I don't know if y'all can think of questions, but I think one of them may be, you know, who is going to guide me? Or
you know, are you, like if I call you and I'm booking, are you yourself my guide, or do you have a team of guides, and what are they like? And
can I talk to your unsuccessful clients?
Well, that's
and right. Successful clients.
Yeah, references. Because I, that one particularly last night, Kenny, we were talking about, I was like thinking, man, like that's so tough. And I've heard stories of, we thought we'd do this and we stayed in the vehicle the whole time, and you have someone who wanted to hunt, you have someone who was very physically limited, and there was no attempt to accommodate that at all.
Right.
And a person ends up like injured and has a miserable time, and they're like, they don't even want to go hunting anymore. You know, that there's both sides of that. So I think really asking the right questions, especially before you invest in a guided hunt. Mm-hmm.
What does a typical day look like
yes.
for your guided hunt? You know,
yeah. Yeah.
The client, I mean, the outfitter should be able to walk you through what a, you know, what you should expect for a day based on your needs. And should be able to explain it to you and how it's going to go out. And if you and if you don't ask that question, then you're kind of setting yourself up, right? Because
right.
you're not going to you go into it with expectation, but nobody's talked about the expectations,
right? And you know, we make it a point in what we do to, you know, like we do hunter calls, right? You know, so they may, you know, someone would book with us, and that's always like kind of the. I feel like we all kind of wonder, you know what I mean? Like you're going to cold call this person who's locked in, and we call asking those questions, and that make, you know, I would say in that tone, if you aren't getting a chance to connect with your guide until your hunt, you know, that may be, that could be potentially, I mean, not everyone does that, but I think it's a mistake to not. Second, you talk about expectations. Please be honest in those.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. Because they're gonna build a hunt based on what you tell them you can do.
Right.
It's not great when you show up the first day and
right.
can't.
You know, and I think it's important to be really honest. You know, share if you've had any injuries, if you've had, you know, some a condition or whatever. You know, it's something we need to know because we don't want anyone to get hurt. You don't want anyone to have any medical event or anything like that. So I think... be honest about those questions. Talk about, it's not necessarily that we're walking all day long, but, you know, can you, it's not that you walk steady all day. I think that would be the ultimate fitness test, though. Think about that. I had this discussion with a buddy of mine the other day. He's big into fitness. I'm like, could you walk all day long? We say that, like we walk all day. Think about it. Could you get up at daylight and walk until dark?
Probably not.
I think that should be the Moose Hunt Podcast Fitness Challenge. All right? So we're going to see how long we can. I don't care if it's flat ground or what it is. You know what I'm saying? But I think that would be a good one. So anyway, I think, you know, those are kind of the things that jumped out to me in terms of just, you know, what do you want for your experience? Honest with yourself, asking the right questions, doing your homework. Because we've heard stories here today of Mike Sargent's buddy that they went on that Alaskan moose hunt with. And he was telling me that they got drawn for permits in different area than they ended up going to Alaska hunting. And he told me that a big part of that was they asked certain questions about that area.
Right.
And found out that it was there were dynamics to that that they weren't interested in going for. Had they not done that,
right.
you know, that might have been a brutal hunt. So anyway, anything else you guys think on this topic? I think those are the big ones in my mind.
Yeah. Tyson needs somebody to do photography on the hunt.
Yeah.
It's a lot to try to do if you're going by yourself.
And I think with that, that's a good point, Kenny. We have technology now that we should be able to document everything.
Right.
I mean, Ed's story earlier. He didn't have any pictures from that. I mean, I wish that all these stories, even my old man says, there's like no pictures.
There might be a few like old camera photos,
right,
but we don't know,
right,
know that, where they are in a box somewhere. But,
right. You know, now these phones now, we got this phone has 100x zoom and video and docu.
Too many pictures.
too many pictures. But take all the pictures you can, ask the right questions. So anyway, that's our collective thought. So stay tuned. We'll be back again with you all soon from the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show.
Thank you, folks, for tuning in to this episode of the Moose Hunt Podcast. That was recorded at the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show at the University of Maine. We had an absolute blast at this show, and we want to thank the Penobscot County Conservation Association and all the supporting sponsors that were able to pull off this great event. Engaging with the public, our listeners, and sharing this platform for all hunters out there to hopefully share and celebrating our great sporting traditions and the mighty moose is the root of all of our efforts and initiative in this project. We want to thank everyone who came by the booth, shared your stories, and hope that folks enjoyed this episode. And maybe next year, we'll put attending the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show on your schedule. Again, we want to thank all the sponsors, supporters out there. Thank our listeners for tuning in. We're going to wrap up this episode now and hope you'll tune in soon for our next episode of the Moose Hunt Podcast, which I know is going to be a very incredible one for everyone out there to hear. So with that being said, be safe, be well, and as always, God bless.